This is Father Bob Warren of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement. Thank you for listening to this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour radio show. The Friars' popular Ave Maria Hour was first brought to the radio airwaves in 1939, recorded in New York City and on the Mountainside Grounds at Graymore, a home in Garrison, New York. These timeless classic stories of the Bible and the lives of the saints came to life each week through dramatic reenactment by professional actors and actresses. You know, friends, Christ once said, "Do not hide your treasure under a bushel." In saying this, he meant, share your gifts, share your talents. The Friars of the Atonement feel the message in these broadcasts remains as powerful and timely as when they were originally aired, and we are so happy to be able to share them with you today. To learn more about the missions and ministries of the Friars of the Atonement, I invite you to visit our website, www.atonementfriars.org. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour.
Saint Bonaventure. By the time Saint Bonaventure was 21, he had become a member of the Order of Friars Minor and had been sent by the provincial to the University of Paris, where he was an outstanding student under the most scholarly teacher of his day, the illustrious Alexander of Hales. When Alexander died in 1245, Bonaventure continued his studies under his successor, John de La Rochelle. Then he went to teach in one of the Franciscan monasteries. One morning in the year 1248, he was finishing his lecture. From our study of the lives of the saints, we're aware that God, in his infinite wisdom, singles out but few for canonization. Do not despair. Christian virtue is not so much in the more heroic exercises of a religious state as in performing ordinary acts well. Perfection of a religious man is to do common things in a perfect manner, and a constant fidelity in small things is a great and heroic virtue. Class dismissed.
Brother Bonaventure.
Oh, yes, Brother Giles.
The letter has just arrived from Paris. Here it is.
Oh, thank you. Oh, John de La Rochelle.
Is bad news?
De La Rochelle is dead. May God rest his soul. He was a great teacher and friend. Oh. Oh, no, I can't believe it.
What is it?
I read this.
At the meeting of the regents this afternoon, you were the unanimous choice to succeed Dr. John de La Rochelle to the chair of moral philosophy. We urge that you do us the honor to accept and notify us to that effect as soon as possible. This is a feather in your cap, Brother Bonaventure.
More like a great rock of responsibility on my back. Brother, do you realize what it is to follow after such men as Alexander of Hales and John de La Rochelle?
But you will accept.
I feel that I must. My beloved teachers use my head as the storehouse of their sublime knowledge, and I am the instrument of passing it on to their students. Meanwhile, at the university, his appointment was being questioned by certain members of the secular staff. And one Guillaume de Saint-Amour was raising a protest, which some years later was to flare into active and violent opposition against the friars.
This is outrageous. As spokesman for the secular teachers, I wish to record our protest against the selection of this Brother Bonaventure to the chair of philosophy.
But why, Guillaume? Surely he's qualified. Both Alexander and John de La Rochelle awarded him highest honors in their courses.
We've nothing personal against him. It's the idea of bringing in these religious people to teach publicly.
But he had his degree to teach publicly.
That's beside the point. If they must teach, let them stay in their own houses and monasteries. Too many of them here as it is.
Only for certain fields, theology and philosophy, where they're eminently qualified.
And there are plenty of secular instructors who could teach those courses.
The faculty feels otherwise.
Then you'll ignore our protest?
I'll submit it at the next faculty meeting.
We urge your support.
I'll not recommend it, nor will I disapprove. As dean, I'll carry out the wishes of the faculty.
Oh, I see. But let me tell you, the group I represent is determined. And if the faculty doesn't act, we will. Good afternoon.
And so Brother Bonaventure began his teaching career in an atmosphere of smoldering resentment and dissatisfaction. At first, this was an impersonal hostility, felt rather than spoken. But then, one day...
Yes? Oh, I beg your pardon, Mrs. Santamore. I thought it was a student. Come in, please.
Brother Bonaventure, are you aware that three of my most promising students of last year are not continuing my course?
Why, no.
Well, I've talked to them. It seems their schedule's too crowded this session.
But doesn't that often happen? A few of my students have told me that they would like to continue my course, but must give it up to study law or literature.
It so happens these three students have dropped my course for yours.
Oh, I see.
Now, just what persuasion did you use?
None, I assure you, Mrs. Santamore. In fact, I've been telling students for the past week that the class is filled, and if they entered, they would have to sit on the floor.
Well, why don't you refuse admission when the classroom is filled?
I don't feel I can deny admission to anyone who wishes to take the course.
I don't suppose you know instructors are paid in accordance to the number of students they teach?
No, I had never thought of it that way.
Oh, of course not. I forgot you're not interested in money.
But friars take a vow of poverty.
Well, I didn't take such a vow, nor did the other secular instructors. Poverty is no virtue to a man who has a wife and a family to raise. When you steal my students, you're taking my bread and butter.
Steal? Oh, surely you don't accuse me of that.
Oh, you may not do it deliberately, but you and the other friars have ways of inducing students to enter your courses.
Please, believe me, we are here only to teach the students.
That's the point. You have no other interests. You can spend as much time with students after class as you do during classes.
Well, that's true, but with those so eager to learn, should we not give them our time without stint?
Well, you have it to give. We don't. We must go home after classes. We have daily obligations, social obligations. We're not lazy. We'd like to give more time to students, but it's impossible. You put us in a bad light with the students.
Yes, I can see your difficulty. Frankly, Mr. Santamore, I have not considered the position you now tell me about.
Since you friars grovel in poverty, you assume others wish to do the same.
There must be some solution to this difficulty.
There is. The friars can get out of the university and let the seculars do the teaching.
Perhaps the system of payment is wrong.
What do you mean?
If there was a fixed salary for instructors, not dependent on the number of students...
And what do we do until that happy event takes place? Starve?
But I, too, am a teacher here. I have nothing to do with determining the university policies.
Well, you can refuse to take the students who dropped my course. You can tell them to return.
I don't feel I have that right.
Then you and the other friars can resign.
Such a step would have to come from the bishop, or more likely from Rome itself.
Several years ago, I warned the dean about this situation. Nothing was done. Well, now we'll act.
What are you going to do?
I have a manuscript. It is called Perils of the Times. When published, it will alert the people to the dangers confronting our schools. We'll drive the mendicant orders from the universities.
Be patient, Monsieur Santamore. Surely there's room for both in our school.
Not under present conditions.
Then why not try to change the conditions?
Driving the friars out will do just that.
Monsieur, Be warned lest you attack the church. You're a loyal Catholic. You know the consequences.
But my fight is not with the church.
When you strike the servants of the church, she will use her authority to defend them.
Santamore published his book, which was a bitter, ill-founded attack against the mendicant orders in his teaching profession. So violent was the reaction it caused that the Pope withdrew the friars from the university pending an investigation, for which a committee was immediately appointed. Brother Bonaventure occupied his time in writing various treatises. One of them was Concerning the Poverty of Christ. This was an answer to the charges hurled by Santamore. After a thorough investigation, Santamore was ordered to burn his book, the opponents to withdraw their charges, and the friars were reinstated at the university. A few months prior to this, however, another important event occurred in the life of Brother Bonaventure.
Order! Order, please. After careful consideration, aided by prayers for divine guidance, we have voted. It is the unanimous will of the brothers that our next minister general be Brother Bonaventure. Brother, I'm sure I speak for all when I urge your acceptance.
Brothers, I well know my incapacities, but I also know it's hard to kick against the goad. So, in spite of my want of understanding, my inexperience and great unwillingness, I'll not persist in opposition to the wishes of a numerous family and the desire of the pontiff, for fear at the same time I resist the will of God. Therefore, I take upon my weak shoulders a heavy, almost intolerable burden. I hope for help from heaven, and I know I can count on help from all my brothers.
Thus, at the age of 36, Bonaventure was made Minister General of the Order of Friars Minor. Soon after, the dispute at the university was settled. And though Brother Bonaventure did not go back to teaching, he was honored along with St. Thomas by receiving a doctor's degree. But even as he took office as Minister General, he found himself with a violent dispute on his hands, this time within the order.
Order! Order, brothers, please! Order, brothers!
Now, let us hear from the spokesman of those who call themselves spirituals, Brother Dennis.
There is no need for any discussion. All the spirituals ask is that the original rules laid down by St. Francis be followed.
By followed, you mean literally?
Yes, to the letter. I can quote many passages from the life of St. Francis to answer these demands for changes.
You are aware, of course, that words and phrases are subject to different interpretations.
There's no confusion about words. Poverty, for instance.
Tell me, what does it mean to live in poverty?
Why, to have no property, no possessions.
None whatever?
Absolutely.
Brother, do you own the clothes on your back?
Well, yes, No. I have them on loan. When I die, they return to the order.
But if our poverty is absolute, would it not be a good thing to take the wool from which we make these garments and sell it for the benefit of the poor?
Well, if you'll pardon me, Brother General, that's carrying an argument to absurdity.
The line between an extreme and an absurdity is very fine.
I grant that St. Francis wore garments, but of the roughest material. Well, otherwise he would have been jailed.
Then he did make some concession to the laws of decency and common sense in his devotion to poverty.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Very well. Now, let's hear from a spokesman for the relaxed group.
St. Francis was founder of our order. He laid down certain principles, but he was wise. He did not go into the details of administration of the order, nor did he try to foresee every possible event which would arise and formulate a hard and fast rule which would govern. He knew well that with a sound set of principles, there should be a certain flexibility at the administration level.
But the laws of administration cannot conflict with the principles.
Oh, no.
But would not your pleas for a few more possessions do that?
But you've just proved conclusively to Brother Dennis that poverty is not absolute. We can't see that a few more personal possessions would detract from our devotion.
Well, I'd much rather you had a lot of personal possessions than a few. A man with 10,000 pieces of gold would not miss the loss of one or two, whereas the man with a few pieces would guard them with his life. No, Brother Simon, I cannot follow your argument. The order will provide whatever is necessary to clothe and feed you. But for your happiness, you must turn to God and Him crucified.
Brother General, may we ask that you decide between us and give your opinion as to which side is right in this matter?
It is evident that there are other factors to consider, and I shall need time to study them. I'll do so as quickly as possible and make recommendations. The meeting is ended.
Why did you adjourn the meeting so abruptly?
We have a new element to contend with. This is more than a dispute between those who want a strict interpretation of the original rule and those who want modifications. Some in the spirituals have come under Abbot Joachim's influence.
Yes, I know of his book, but I've not read it.
Abbot Joachim divides all time into three stages, of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. It is his contention that the time period of the Son extended from the year 1 to the year 1260.
What? 3 years from now, according to Abbot Joachim, the rule of Christ would be superseded by that of the Holy Spirit.
If we follow his reasoning to its logical conclusion.
Well, that is... Oh, I hesitate to say what.
Heresy.
What are you to do?
Between the extremists regarding the relaxation of rules, I shall walk straight down the middle. But in regard to Joachimites, there can be no compromise. They must recant or face the ecclesiastical court. I shall issue an encyclical letter at once for reforms, and then I shall call a general meeting to consider revisions of our constitutions. Bonaventure moved at once to unify the order, and the incipient heresy was stamped out. He then carefully studied all the constitutions of the order from the time of its founding and made recommendations for changes. Then in 1260, he called a general meeting at Narbonne, at which a code of laws was adopted. Among the provisions of this meeting was one delegating Bonaventure to write a life of St. Francis, which would supersede the others in existence. 3 years later, the life was finished, and a general meeting was convoked to approve it and to adopt it.
I move that the life of St. Francis, compiled by the Minister General, be approved as the standard biography, to the exclusion of all others. That all other lives or legends of our founding saint be destroyed.
I object.
Yes, Brother Dennis?
I strenuously object. To do that would close the primitive sources of the life of St. Francis. You'd be destroying the real St. Francis and offering a counterfeit in his stead.
Brother Dennis, St. Francis has been dead for over 30 years. Already the legends about him are legion. Our Minister General has devoted 3 years of painful research to compile the facts of his life and to weed out the heresy, the fanciful, and the legendary. Now, it's imperative we have one authentic life.
Well, very well, I'm willing to approve the offered book. But why must the others be destroyed?
For the reason that there's great variance among the writers as to what St. Francis did or said. Now, how can we follow the pattern if it changes from one book to another at the whim and the imagination of the authors, many of whom never knew St. Francis himself or ever talked to those who did?
How can we be guided if one brother will quote from St. Francis to support his view, and another brother of opposite view can quote some different version of St. Francis?
I agree. I myself have read most of the lives of St. Francis and have found glaring inconsistencies. I say, let's approve the one authentic book and destroy all others.
My brothers, when at the meeting of Narbonne, I was delegated to write a true, factual life of St. Francis, I undertook the task with a prayer in my heart that in doing so, we could eliminate the source of dissensions and start afresh. The decision to destroy other books may seem harsh, but it is necessary. Legends created by the imagination of man have their place, but not as rules governing a religious order. The simple truth about St. Francis is so inspiring that it needs no embellishment, no adornment, no exaggeration. In this, his story is like that of our Savior, where the noble word falters to describe the simple deed.
I call the question.
Call the question. Call the question.
From the time Bonaventure was made Minister General, he had spared no effort to unify the order. Gradually, this had been accomplished so effectively that he is regarded today as the second founder of the Franciscans. In 1265, he was selected to become Archbishop of York, but because of his singular humility, he had steadfastly asked to be excused from accepting. But now, in the year 1273, the Pope, once having bowed to Bonaventure's wishes, offered him the position of Cardinal Bishop of Albano. This time, there could be no refusal. With a message instructing Bonaventure to take office came the Cardinal's hat.
Brother, look what came for you.
I'm busy, brother. I must finish washing the dishes that we're to eat on them today.
Didn't you wash those dishes once?
Well, the cook didn't like the way I did them. Half of them must be done again.
So the Minister General takes orders from the cook.
There was no getting out of it. Remember how I've always said perfection consists in doing common things in perfect manner?
You never let us forget that, brother.
Well, our cook remembered it, too. He applies it even to washing dishes.
Well, what shall I do with your cardinal's hat?
Hang it on the limb of that tree. As soon as I can spare a moment to dry my hands, I'll try it on. As cardinal, one of Bonaventure's first assignments was to prepare the questions to be discussed at the Ecumenical Council at Lyon. His handling of the delicate question of reuniting the Greeks with the Roman Church was largely responsible for reaching an understanding. While the council was still in session, he died of unknown causes and was buried with great ceremony. A product of the Middle Ages, he united within himself all that was sublime and beautiful of that period, notably tender piety and profound learning.